Mercedes have done it. They finally won a race this year, but the win has come from George Russell in a scintillating Sao Paulo Grand Prix. Welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast. This is episode 246, where we are reviewing this year's Sao Paulo Grand Prix in Brazil. I'm your host, Tom Horrocks, the voice from the mist, as I'm having technical issues, so you currently can't see me, but that's more for the better for everyone else. Joining me today as well is Grid Talk host, Owen Medford.
Yeah, hello.
Max Verstappen fanboy, Tom Downey.
Hello.
And Philip Matthew from the Grip Strip podcast.
Hello.
And if you enjoy this podcast, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify and a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We will shout out everyone who leaves us a review on our next show. And if you leave us a review, you will automatically be entered into a monthly prize draw to win some fabulous Grid Talk merchandise. And if you haven't done so already, why not subscribe to us on YouTube and click the bell to let us know when we're going live. We're normally live, but again, due to other technical issues completely independent of these ones that I'm having, we have no live stream today, unfortunately. But we will be back to normal next week for Abu Dhabi. We are nearing 800 subscribers on YouTube, even without our technical problems. So we have lots of video content for you to get your teeth into. So give us a thumbs up, share and comment, because we love hearing from you. If you've got any questions you want to ask us during our live streams, then we will attempt to answer those in the post show also. So we're going to go straight into the race then. So we had a sprint race, which was George Russell's first race win in Formula One, but his first Grand Prix win has come today, Owen. And pole, fastest lap, win, sprint win. Give the boy a car and he delivers.
Yeah, he certainly does. I know a lot of people don't seem to think that, but you know, you can't really say that George Russell did anything wrong this weekend at all. You know, and he put an overtake on Max Verstappen, who, as we know, is not exactly the easiest guy to get past. And George Russell did have to do some work to get there. So, you know, it's an excellent maiden race win the entire way around. Yeah, I mean, obviously, he did have a bit of an issue in qualifying, but even that seemed to go his way. So, you know, it just seemed like this was his lucky weekend. And, you know, he executed that perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. And moving on to Lewis Hamilton, Tom, your favourite driver besides Max Verstappen, I am absolutely certain. He had a troubled race, actually, but came back through for second place. Perhaps a little bit of luck with the safety car. If he'd have done the strategy he wanted to do, may well have, on another day, won that race, but wasn't to be, and came through second place. How did you rate his performance today?
Actually, it's a bit of a vintage Hamilton performance today. He had a good start from pole, and he didn't risk sort of any stupid moves on his teammates. You know, he probably did have it in the back of his mind that, oh, you know, I really want to get a race win, you know, at least one time this season, because obviously he's got one chance left before it'll be his first ever win the season in F1. I thought, you know, with the safety car, you know, at first, you know, when that radio message came on, but when he said, oh, the cars behind me are going to be on newer, softer tyres, I think for a split second he probably had like Abu Dhabi flashbacks intensify, but no, he held it really well. He controlled the pace behind him. The Ferraris were never really a threat. He never really challenged Russell. I mean, he had a bit of a nibble at both the restarts, and he certainly took a big chunk out of Max. We'll get onto that in a minute. But yeah, you know, he looked like he was not destined, but he looked like he was sort of settled into second place today, which, you know, he'll probably be a bit disappointed that he couldn't win. And he was obviously a bit irate when Mercedes pitted him to cover off Perez, I think, midway through the race. Because I questioned why he was boxing at the time, but I understand why they did it. And, you know, the safety car sort of negated that anyway. But obviously they didn't know a safety car was going to come out in the first place. So, yeah, all in all, I thought it was actually a really, really, really good performance from Hamilton. I wouldn't have said driver of the day for him, only because I would have said Carlos Sainz for driver of the day, given where he started compared to where he finished, and given he had, you know, Ferrari strategy to contend with, which is like trying to win a 100-meter sprint with no legs. Yeah. But other than that, I can see why he was voted driver of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. A strong performance from the, like you say, a vintage performance. But again, safety cars just not quite falling for him. But I think, to be honest, George had him covered. Even at the restart there, he had three laps younger tyres than Hamilton. But, you know, he still pulled out a huge gap right at the end there. Those last two laps, he just drove away from him. And I think any thought that Hamilton had, he was evaporated come lap 70 when George started pulling out a gap. But Carlos Sainz finished off the podium, and once again, a tear off into brake duct ruins his race to a degree, but then the safety car brings it straight back for him. Given the medium tyre offset, was his shot of winning, did he really have a shot of winning in this race, Phil? Because there were times where I thought he may have been the person to potentially upset the apple cart at the front there.
I mean, I think he had great pace time. I mean, this race yesterday, he was up there, finished second in the sprint, had to give up the five-place grid penalty, of course, today. And he had good pace on the start, was able to move up. He seemed to be the only guy that was kind of in the mix with George and with Checo, at least in the first stage of the race. Yes, to, you know, tear off getting into the cake pan or whatever. Part of the right rear brake was a problem, and it reset their whole entire race. But Carlos seemed to be pushing the whole race and was running really well. And he's probably had maybe a couple other performances. You know, his British Grand Prix win stands out the most. But where you see that kind of pace and that advantage, he has a more steadier head, even with the BS that Ferrari pulls. He had the better weekend in general, even though he had to take a grid penalty, maximizes his weekend and gets another third place finish at the side of his first career podium. He's only 6 points behind Lewis for fifth in the Drivers' Championship. So that's still in play, depending on what they do next week at Abu Dhabi. So, I mean, considering where they started the weekend, knowing he was going to take a grid penalty, he performed, he did a solid, strong job all weekend, and coming through the third place finish in a disadvantaged situation. Credit to Carlos Sainz, keeps the gap. Ferrari was able to minimize their point loss that they were looking at a few laps before to Mercedes in regards to the constructors. It's 19 points in that sense. So that'll be a little harder for Mercedes to overcome next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd actually completely forgotten about his five-place grid drop, so that just goes to show as well what a great performance that he has done, because that was obviously nothing to do with him. That was the team's decision to give him that new engine. And his teammate, Charles Leclerc, the same name but in a different language, he found himself fighting for a podium at the end there. What did you make, Owen, of his protestations to be let past his teammate right at the end, and how do you think his race went?
I think it's a totally fair thing to ask about. You know, we're getting right to the death of the season. Carlos Sainz can't lose anything at this point, and probably isn't. You know, we saw that Mercedes just had too much speed for anyone. You know, it took him 21 races or whatever it was, 22 races to get there. But yeah, there's no way that I don't think Carlos Sainz is going to be getting ahead of Lewis Hamilton in the championship. So, you know, it makes perfect sense to me that they probably should have switched around the two Ferraris, you know, to try and get that second place in the championship. Then again, I do take the point from Martin Brundle and the Ferrari team themselves in that, you know, they weren't safe to Alonso, who would absolutely love to poach probably a third place off a botched swap around of those two drivers. You can't take away that third place that Carlos absolutely earned his way to. You know, I think the saving grace for Charles is actually Red Bull's inability to make that swap, obviously for completely different reasons. So, you know, it does bring it down to that last race, and maybe it'll be a bit easier for Charles to secure that second place in the Drivers' Championship. Then again, that is a consolation prize, let's be honest, for Ferrari, you know, to get second place in a championship that doesn't really matter. You know, I think it's indicative of Ferrari's season in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, Charles Leclerc himself has actually said that he doesn't really care about second place, but he seemed to care quite a lot about it when it was a teammate ahead of him and a podium on offer. So he thinks he's protesting a bit too much there. Next up was Fernando Alonso, the second best Spanish driver of the day, somebody who I thought had an outside chance of a podium there right at the end, and a great result for Alpine and constructors, starting with a fifth place for Fernando. But that relationship with Ocon, Tom, now surely completely dead going into the final race together.
That relationship has crumbled harder than the one I had with my ex, honestly. Those who are they're just completely toxic with each other now. And bearing in mind, if you think about like Hungary last year, when they were like peak bromance, that was when they were in the honeymoon period. The honeymoon period has long long gone. And I think this was completely proven by when Ocon was told to let Alonso pass, and Ocon threw an absolute hissy fit on the radio. I understand why as well, to be fair. That whole relationship that Alonso has got with Ocon and with Alpine and Team Enstone, it's just crumbled into nothingness. I mean, he'll still be back in 3 years, and his ashes will be scattered there because he loves the place. You know, he's got an unhealthy obsession with Team Enstone. But yeah, in terms of his drive today, I mean, perhaps a little bit fortuitous with the safety car coming out when it did, and there was a period where a load of cars pitted, which would have swapped the order a bit and dropped a few cars out the points. I think Mick Schumacher was one of them, because I noticed it on the leaderboard. It was sort of like half a dozen cars sort of all pitted at once, about a third of the way into the race, and it must have been there that Alonso benefited. I didn't notice what happened at the start. I don't know if he had one of his vintage starts, you know, where he sort of like lights through the field and overtakes five cars before we get to turn one or what. I didn't see it. I was too busy focusing on the front. But yeah, I mean, you know, ultimately in F1, you know, something which I say quite a lot is you play the hand that you were dealt, and he's been dealt this hand, and he has grabbed it with both hands. I'm using a lot of hand puns, and yeah, he's dragged that car to a pretty damn impressive P5. Given that McLaren had a double DNF, which obviously we'll get into in a bit, and the battle that Alpine have with the McLaren in the Constructors' Championship, this could be huge for fourth in the Constructors.
Yeah, absolutely. That looks like that fight may well be up now with the set. Now I think Alpine 167, McLaren 140 out. Yeah, it's a big swing, and with the pace of the McLaren and the pace of Daniel Ricciardo in particular, that fight now is well and truly over. And Max Verstappen, whose fight for the championship is well and truly over, but he certainly wasn't willing to give up any places today, was he, Phil? And the race completely defined by what we thought would have been that crash early on, but really his refusal to let Checo through. What did you make of it? And also, obviously, the rest of his race with the collision with Hamilton as well.
Well, it's typical. I mean, yes, he's won 15 Grand Prix or whatever. He'll probably win this next race, and or 14, 15, whatever races he's won. He's world champion 2 years running. But you see the other side of the guy. You know, yesterday they, I guess, made a mistake with their tire strategy. Didn't put him on softs. They put him on mediums, and he was kind of out there, kind of hung out to dry. Didn't seem all that happy about it. They were trying to play it off as though he was getting better strategy for today. He didn't have as much pace as even Checo in this race. The strategy then flipped over towards in the wrong way for Checo. He went and protested on the radio. I mean, it's the same crap they did in Mexico too, so it's not like it's surprising, but he protested on the radio. Then he goes into the pen after the race and says, well, I wasn't going to back off. Well, Sparky, there's 19 people that drive around you like you're a god, and there's one person that treats you like what you are. And it seems like you guys seem to get together more than other people. It just happens to be the two best drivers on the grid. So, and probably the two most toxic fan bases in Formula One on top of it. But when you have had such a great year this year, and you've won the Drivers' Championship, you've won the Constructors' Championship running away, bringing that kind of toxicity into play doesn't seem to be the greatest thing for team morale or for the team moving forward. I mean, I guess they signed Enzo Fittipaldi, and then they have Nyck de Vries, so they figure they have their next person that's going to roll over for them due time, but today wasn't one of his best performances by any stretch of the imagination. I was surprised they actually gave him a penalty. I thought they would give the penalty to Lewis because that's what they usually do. But in the end, his penalty, he didn't need the penalty. His penalty was the damage he got. The pit stop was 10 seconds, they say, but by that point, he was nowhere. And, you know, for as good of a race, as good of a season as he's had this year, you know, sometimes it doesn't go so well. And we see how it goes when it doesn't go so well for him. So I figure he'll come back next week and he'll go back to what he usually does, win the pole, win the race, and nobody will see him. So then he'll get to leave with 15 wins this season. But today and this weekend definitely wasn't one of those weekends for him.
Yeah, and it's surprising, really, that given that he had all these problems today, and obviously the 10-second pit stop to change the rear wing, then or the front wing, well, then another 10-second pit stop to serve the 5-second penalty and dropping down the field for the time lost, yet he still came ahead of Sergio Perez, Owen. So he didn't seem to have the pace today. And I know there was fortune that favoured Verstappen with the safety car, and Perez was a bit of a sitting duck on the old tyres, but he played the team game well, let Verstappen through so he could attack the others, and even if his teammate didn't reciprocate. But I mean, how do you rate his race and really his season in general? Because I'm one of those people that is not entirely convinced by Sergio Perez. What's your thoughts?
I think Sergio Perez is kind of well aware of the position he's in. I think he's now painfully aware of the position he's in, however. You know, we all remember Moto21. I don't think there's anything he could have done about that. And I don't think it would have served him well to kick up a fuss, you know, by slowing down Max Verstappen, as you say, when he was passed earlier today. Obviously, he doesn't have the speed. He doesn't have the speed. I will show the sign. But, you know, this is... I should have really put it further back, because this is the elephant in Red Bull's room. You know, if you're listening, it is a Moto21 sign. And because it keeps coming back to haunt them. It's fairly obvious that Max Verstappen is a faster driver. I don't think that's going to come as any surprise, bearing in mind that he's younger. He seems to, you know, and Sergio Perez has always been a bit more of a utility driver by comparison. But, you know, I do feel sorry for Sergio Perez, because he has put in, as he said, and, you know, as he said in the interviews, as we've all heard, I mean, sorry to hijack your point here, but, you know, he's really gone to bat for the team multiple times. And you know, for a second time in about 10 years, we've got Red Bull who seemingly, I imagine they will be unable to remind the lead driver who pays their bills. You know, I think Max Verstappen and his team need to remember that it does say Max, you know, it says it's a contract between Red Bull and Max Verstappen. And I know he's won 2 world titles, but he really should get out of the way, regardless of what may or may not have happened in Monaco. You know, he can throw his Red Bull out the pram as much as he wants, but, you know, when it comes down to it, this is a short-sighted move that he's pulled on a driver who does think in the long term and has thought in the long term, you know, for the good of teams that he's been in. And that is, I think, the value of Sergio Perez. He does think about that. He doesn't think, I'm going to be an uncompromising driver who takes what I want to the detriment of everyone and anyone else who gets in my way. And I think that maybe, Tom, that's why maybe he's not the fastest, but there's many faster drivers who aren't driving in Formula One, whereas Sergio Perez, you know, not 10 years ago, was ruffling the feathers of the top end of the grid, and yet he's still here for various different reasons. And it's partially probably because he does, you know, he's a team player on that one. So I think that's the value of Sergio Perez, and I hope that this time Red Bull get it a bit different, and they sort of I guess understand the utility of what they've got. Hopefully they make it up so that next year, if it gets a bit marginal, Max Verstappen doesn't end up, you know, ruining the decision he's made today.
Yeah, and I think one thing as well, even if there was anything said about Monaco and Perez potentially, you know, purposely messing up to get the pole, he was fighting for a world championship then, and he's proved multiple times since then that he will move aside for Max Verstappen, and I don't think Max Verstappen's season is going to be defined on whether he finished 6th or 7th in the Brazilian Grand Prix, but unfortunately his refusal to obey team orders just might. So that's kind of a bit of a bad legacy that he's set aside there, and it's kind of put a bit of a sour point in the season for me. I was fully expecting him to let him past, and he didn't, and it was a bit of a surprise for me, because I thought he's been a lot better this year when it comes to, you know, his kind of being a human being in general. But yeah, he's kind of proved me wrong a little bit there. So I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. But another person as well, who's had a bit of a been quite defiant as well, Tom, Esteban Ocon. He was very defiant with his team when he was told that to let Fernando through. Was he right in what he said, given what had happened in the weekend already, or should he just have towed the line? I know you've touched on this already, but do you want to elaborate some more?
No, you should have towed the line. Team orders are team orders, as we just talked about with Max. And regardless of what race you're having, your teammate might be having a different race. And if you look at where Alonso finished, this is exactly why. You know, Alonso could have been on the podium. You know, the Ferraris would have tried to swap position, as we talked about. So also, Ocon, you know, it's one thing to ask a question, you know, to say, oh, are you sure? Why are we doing this? But to then go on and on and on and start arguing effectively with your race engineer, that doesn't look very good. And Alpine is not a happy camp at the minute. You know, it must. I really do think it's the Otmar Szafnauer effect, because everywhere he goes, he just seems to be miserable. I mean, you know, could you imagine going to work every day thinking, "Oh, for God's sake, I've got to report to that knobhead." I try not to swear. Then, you know, it's just not. I tell you what, I'll say that again. We can cut that out. The Alpine camp just does not look like a happy camp at all. Could you imagine having to go to work and dealing with that every day? You know, it's not good for you. And that's probably partly why Alonso has left. I mean, Ocon is only going to get worse next year, because he and Gasly do not like each other, as we know. And can you imagine trying to enforce team orders between those two? You know, Ocon is like a French George Russell. And Gasly is, well, Gasly, you know, decent driver, but very, very arrogant. It's just, I don't even know what to say about it. It's just like, you know, Ocon just, sometimes I think we forget how young these drivers are. And drivers like Max and Ocon and, I mean, Leclerc less so. Well, no, I'll put him in there because he's been in F1 for 4 years now. 5 years, because he joined in 2018. They've been in the sport a long time and they're still young. You know, they're certainly younger than me, which in art, to be fair. But it's like, you know, they are at the sort of the top echelons of motorsport. And yeah, I cannot even begin to imagine the pressure that they're under, both, you know, mentally and then obviously with all the physical sort of pressure on them when they're in the car. But it's no excuse for saying what you're saying, and it's no excuse for arguing with people who are in better positions to make informed decisions. So Ocon needs to wind his neck in, to be honest. He needs to trust in the team, which sounds like it's pretty difficult at the minute. You know, Alpine haven't exactly covered themselves in glory this year. You know, yes, they've come fourth in the constructors. Well done, you beat a fledgling McLaren that basically only had one driver, because the other one was a complete donut. So what do you really want? You know, a job well done? You're really going to toast that? So, I mean, you know, so I've just gone in on them a bit here, but I think they're going to need it. Not that they're going to be listening. Otmar, you listening, bruv? You know, something needs to change at Alpine, whether it's management or what. But also, I've got to give props to, I can't remember Ocon's race engineer's name, sorry, but his race engineer who was saying, we will, you know, discuss it after the race, all the rest of it. And Ocon was saying, you know, no, why would, you know, do it now, blah, blah, blah. But his race engineer was absolutely right in saying, you know, we'll talk about it after the race. You know, we won't air it in public, which is absolutely the right thing to do, which Otmar didn't do yesterday. So Alpine just need a complete, the winter break cannot come soon enough for them, so they can get toxic Alonso out, get Gasly, and let those two like fight over who goes in the front seat of the car on a family holiday, because they were still children. And yeah, hopefully next year will be a better year for them.
I would say I disagree slightly with you, Tom, and I think Ocon was right to say, let's do it, you know, on the next straight. You know, let's not do it at the start line. But I don't think that's what they were asking him. They were just asking him to not fight Fernando. But he certainly has the right to suggest it. But I think maybe he probably went a little bit far with it. But that's just my opinion. If you disagree with me, then please, you know, put a comment and we can have a chat about it. But Valtteri Bottas next up. 2 points for Nigel. It keeps Alfa ahead of Aston. Well, I mean, they not quite ahead of Aston. They're 5 points clear, I think. And so 2 points, it gives them a decent push ahead. It seems that the late upgrades seem to be giving them the edge at the moment in that particular battle. Do you agree with that, Phil?
I mean, the fact that the Alfa Romeo actually finished a race is a win in itself. Valtteri's had quite a rough time this year with that. So the fact that he was able to go and have a decent run and stuff, you know, get through. And he was up there up to sixth, I think, before all those pit stops happened, you guys had mentioned earlier. I mean, it's a good run for them, good race. Joe got stuck within all the strategy. So, I mean, to take that 5-point lead going into Abu Dhabi, knowing that the Aston Martin right now, I think, is the better car, and Vettel deserved a way better result than he got the way he raced today. It was a lost opportunity with the way the pit stops and strategy went, but in the case of Bottas, they were able to actually kind of get ahead of it and be able to beat that, and essentially for what their car really is, to still be sixth in the Constructors' Championship with a decent shot to hold that, it's going, that's a good result, because they've had so many DNFs, you know, this year, you know, power unit issues, we have damage, contact. So for Bottas, this year, of course, has been a year, you know, being a team leader, essentially, again, for the first time since his Williams days, in the opposite of what Alpine situation seems to be. The Alpha Sauber situation seems to be much healthier, much more positive as the years are going on. So for Valtteri, I'm trying to also, I'm trying to go and check the drivers here for a second. He's right now 10th, and he's going to finish 10th unless Sebastian Vettel has a huge result, or Daniel Ricciardo. Well, that's not going to happen. But Sebastian Vettel has a huge result next week in his final Grand Prix. Valtteri Bottas is going to finish 10th in the World Championship of the Sauber, which you consider last year was 9th in the Constructors. So great job by them this year, and great job by Valtteri. Even in a lot of, they've had a lot of issues for them to recover and be ahead of some teams that generally have better cars. The Aston Martin being the most, the biggest example of that at the moment, to be able to hold on. That's a good job by them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we move on to the Aston Martins now, Wayne. And last lap, Lance takes the final point off Vettel right at the death. Unlucky for Seb, especially given that he seemed to be the quicker driver all weekend. I didn't see exactly how it happened, but I guess Lance probably had a better tyre offset right at the death. What happened with Aston Martin today?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like you say. I mean, Stroll has pulled a sort of blinder there. And I've been trying to work out, based on the tyres, how Vettel's kind of allowed that to happen. He had in theory, you know, the faster tyre strategy, because the mediums didn't seem to be suiting many people, and Stroll had two sets of used mediums, whereas Vettel obviously only had to do that one in the middle of stint of the race, and then got to put on a nice set of new softs. I genuinely don't know how that's what's happened for Vettel there. It's a real shame that one, but you know, it's a good result for Stroll, and on balance, let's be honest, that's a better result overall for next year. Vettel was, you know, going to be, I mean, he's had a poor race, to be honest. He's lost a couple of positions overall. I didn't really say much of the Aston Martins, to be honest. You know, I know they were obviously involved and stuff, but they weren't, you know, I think that was a bit of a ding dong from yesterday. That was about it. Unless I'm missing something egregious, but yeah, no, it's a great weekend for Stroll. Obviously coming off the back of that penalty and starting 15th, but yeah, no, for Vettel, that's not great. It's a poor way to end probably the last time you drive around Brazil in an F1 car, and it just leaves Abu Dhabi to try and extract something from.
Yeah, he does have a good record in Abu Dhabi. He does tend to race quite well there, but generally only in good machinery, which Aston is, given their props, they have improved over the last sort of five or six races, but yeah, I can't see a bumper result there for Vettel. But Pierre Gasly then, Tom, you avoided getting a race ban today, although it was a little bit tentative for a time after yesterday's sprint. He's now going to be treading on eggshells right up until May, when his the next super license points come off for his new team. How did you see his race, and how's he gonna cope with this situation hanging over his head now?
Well, speaking of someone who has tread a fine line with points on a license and coming close to getting a ban, I know kind of how he feels. Granted, mine wasn't on the racetrack, unless that's what you call the M4 at 2 a.m. but no, I wish that's a joke as well. That aside, I mean, he's just going to keep his nose clean. Part of the issue with something like that is he needs to... there are some factors which are going to be outside of his control. And it's like, if he's caught up in a collision and the stewards deem him to be somewhat at fault, there's nothing he can do about that because he had it. I think it was in Turkey last year, maybe the year before, when he had a first lap clash with Alonso, and I want to say someone else. And it was everybody, commentators, everybody said a racing incident, and stewards gave him a 5-second penalty and pointed his license or something. So it's so he needs to do what he can to keep himself out of trouble. I mean, Abu Dhabi's got like 40 million runoffs on each corner, so he should be all right for runoff and, you know, for not getting tangled up with someone too much. He's he's given up with AlphaTauri, isn't he? You know, he's got one race left. He's grown quite disillusioned with them. You know, if you think back to the heights of, you know, Monza 2020, and then last year he had such a good season. This year, you know, he's just, I think ever since it was announced that Checo was staying at Red Bull for a few years, I think that was when he realised that, look, I'm really not getting back in that team. And I think from there on, I was when he started looking elsewhere. And then Alonso has done the most Alonso thing by moving to Aston Martin, you know, the absolute GOAT team of the field, aside from Williams. You know, things have somewhat fallen into place for him. Whether he's going to be any better at Alpine, I honestly don't know. But he just needs to keep his head down, keep his nose clean. I mean, say the points come off at the start of May, that still gives us, well, 4 or 5 races plus Abu Dhabi this season before he has any points off his license. So he needs to be careful. He needs to be really careful because he is treading a fine line. And he'd be the first driver since, what, Grosjean in 2012 to get a race ban for tossing up?
And yeah, the
Belgian. Well, yeah, Grosjean wasn't even for. Yeah, but Grosjean wasn't even for tossing up. That was an instant race ban. That was the reason they brought in this point system. So it's he would be the first. And I think it's a bit of a bad look for Formula One if he does end up with a race ban. So let's just say, I think if he gets through Abu Dhabi without getting any points, there may well be some rule clarifications next year, and they may well change some of the points allocation. And given that we have more races now, they may well say, oh no, it's now 15 for a race ban or something like that. I can see that happening because it's not a good look for Formula One to have a driver that's, you know, can be a bit reckless sometimes, but certainly isn't dangerous, and for him to end up getting a race ban. But up next then is Zhou Guanyu, Phil, and at the safety car restart he had the oldest tyres of anyone, and was a little bit screwed by the safety car there, and but still seems a step behind Bottas even without that. But ending his rookie season in decent fashion, I think.
Yeah, I mentioned Zhou earlier. He was a step behind this weekend to Valtteri, but he doesn't. There are days that he does look like a rookie, and there are days that he just blends in. And there's nothing wrong with blending in. You want more next year from him. You would think that AlphaSauber wants to do well in their last year of their partnership. I think being out on the old tires, you're kind of screwed no matter what you do. Considering he was last in the race at points today, to end up 12th even on old tires is kind of, I guess, you know, worst case, you know, or best case scenario. I mean, I think the next two people probably would be more aggrieved than Zhou. So, I mean, credit to him. He goes and he'll get the Rookie of the Year or whatever, and expectations will be much higher going into year two for him for his second year.
Yeah, I think he'll probably get the prescribed 3 years that Franz Tost said that every driver needs in Formula One, which I don't completely agree with. But I think he definitely, it's a rookie season, so we've got to take it with a pinch of salt. He's comparable to Bottas, and that's all you can really ask of him. He's not embarrassing himself. He's not embarrassing the team. If he doesn't take a step forward next year, then questions might be asked. But certainly for a rookie season, he's done okay. And someone who's, you know, do say that this potentially is his rookie season, as he didn't really have a proper car last year away. He's Mick Schumacher ran as high as 8th in the early stages, but fell away in the second half. Was there ever really points on the cards for Mick Schumacher? And is this the last race we'll see where we know that he's definitely a Formula One driver, or is it going to be Nico Hülkenberg incoming?
I really don't know. I like Mick Schumacher, but half of that's not nostalgia, but you know, I just got sort of a preference for him just because, you know, I kind of like his dad. No, I don't know. He's not, you know, as much as he did kind of get up to eighth, but he also, you know, through the pit stops, he just kind of fell backwards. He's finished nigh on Guan Yu Zhou and things like that. Sorry, Zhou Guan Yu, but Zhou Guan Yu's a rookie and he's finished ahead of him. And, you know, that was at a safety car restart where he would have had 10 laps to have a go at him. And, you know, maybe he's stuck, you know, he's obviously got the same engine. So it just comes down to car performance. And there's not too much between those two things, but between those two cars. But I don't think he's showing enough promise. I think I've said it before. And as much as it's a business decision to get Nico Hülkenberg in there, it's probably not the right one, but it's the one they're probably going to end up making. You know, I think Mick Schumacher, I think even points wouldn't have saved him. I won't save him when it comes to getting an F1 seat. And that's a shame, to be honest. I think it's going to be unfortunate that, you know, as much as he could put in a good performance and things like that and do fairly well, but he was never really the Haas that anyone was looking at this weekend. And I just think it's going to be a case of, you know, sometimes we do see people come and go with not the fanfare or the success that we would hope for them. But, you know, I think that's just the nature of Formula One. You take that away, you start taking away its soul. So as much as it hurts for Mick, it's just the way it's got to be, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think he's had his shot and it just hasn't worked out. That's happened with hundreds and hundreds of drivers in the past. But he does have the benefit that he won't be forgotten because of all of the exploits of his father. He will just be forever known. I mean, I'm sure Ralf Schumacher is very happy because he's no longer going to be known as the worst Schumacher in Formula One. So that's certainly helped. But certainly, as you say, points were never really on the cards for him. And there was only one team that seemed further away from points than anyone else, Tom, and that's Williams. And we're doing them together. And Albon started on the hards but changed them after just four laps. And that was, you know, seemed to be an active choice by the team. There wasn't something wrong. Latifi, the only other driver on the entire field to try the hard tyres, only lasted 12 laps on them. How frustrating a race is this for Williams fans?
Oh, mate, I couldn't even imagine being a Williams fan at the minute. My God, we're going to be soul-destroying. I mean, Albon went on to the hards because they were going to go long. That obviously went to pan when with that first lap tussle. So that's why they sacked the hards off quite early. It was the Latifi on hards. Cool. I honestly don't know what to say about him. He's got one race left. Just try not to, you know, I don't know. Perhaps he can be the official Nutella supplier of F1 next year. I don't know. And, you know, I think that's probably be a better job for him. I mean, I'll buy loads, obviously. But yeah, it's just, Williams, you know, just after last year where they were looking like they were actually going to get somewhere this year, and then it's just petered out into like utter nothingness. It's got to be like soul strength for those people who work there. I mean, I'll say it, I hope they can come back stronger next year. I hope they're working on the car for next year. I hope they can identify what the fundamental issue is. Because that team has been on a steady decline throughout the turbo hybrid era, and drivers like Bottas and Massa only, you know, somewhat mask that effect. It's like the car has always had some potential, but it's generally been quite bad. And if you look like 2017 onwards, driver choices, you know, a few, you know, threes that I can think of off the top of my head, just everything, you know, that team just needs a big reset, and hopefully Dorrelton Capital can do that. I think they've got the right man with Jos Capito. You know, Jos has got the right idea. You know, I think he's the right man for the job. They've got a good driver in Alba. You know, he's on a multi-year deal, so there's going to be none of this. Or is he going to be gone? Or is he going to be going back to, because, you know, he's not going to go back to Red Bull. You know, so they've been lacking that stability. So obviously, when Russell was there, it was always that he was going to be going to Mercedes. People can deny all they want. He was always there as a Mercedes junior, because obviously Williams is a Mercedes powered team. So hopefully a bit of stability in that sense can help. But my God, they need to have a proper look at what was going on. I know I was supposed to talk about them today in the race. The only thing I can say is that that's why Albon got rid of the hards early, is because the Williams were going to go long. And probably bank on a safety car later on, which obviously came, but they sacked them off pretty early because they obviously weren't going to work. And I don't think we saw anyone else go on hards throughout the race.
Yeah, so just Latifi, the only other driver on those hards. It seems a baffling decision, but obviously just didn't have the pace on them that they're expecting. But somebody else then, we'll move on to the other AlphaTauri driver then, Phil, is Yuki Tsunoda. A confusing moment for him today. It was on the last safety car restart, seeing him just pull to the side, letting everyone through. He was. I've gone back and watched this on the onboards, and he was on track ahead of the Williams cars. They pass him and unlap themselves, and actually pass him for position. And the team are telling him, hold position, we've not got the okay to go. And he lets the entire. Then he pulls over, and lets the entire field through on the restart, including the Williams drivers that one lap earlier and overtook him. So confusion all round at AlphaTauri, but. I mean, that's pretty much the only thing we saw from him today. But what did you think about that? And what actually happened with that decision? How did that even come about?
I mean, they take forever under these safety cars as it is. You know, these safety cars are long, just like they are in North American Racing Series. Yes, there is the aspect of cleaning up incidents or taking a car off the track or whatever. The first incident, which we'll get into here shortly, seemed to take a while, six or seven laps, getting the car that we're going to mention here in just a moment off the track. It was a VSC for 3 or 4 laps. Then they went to full safety car for another like 6 or whatever it seemed like. And then they insist on having lap cars unlap themselves, but then they don't give. How does the AlphaTauri team not get that message? Everybody else is unlapping themselves. Why isn't Yuki Tsunoda? That's just, I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's they're ninth or whatever in constructors this year. I think I'm right. I'll check myself. Just give me a sec here. Yeah, they're ninth in constructors. They're 2 points ahead of Haas, and it should have been worse for them today because Kevin Magnussen qualified. Had the great qualifying, didn't have as much pace in the sprint, but was able to score 1 point. I think Mick should have been in the points if it weren't for that last safety car. They should be further behind in this spot. Their car is terrible. They should be glad that Williams exists because AlphaTauri in the last few years has really went in the tank. And Yuki Tsunoda now is under pressure, more pressure than I think he was even this year, because there really wasn't a clear-cut person that was going to take his ride. There might be some aggro going on in the main team, but I have a hard time believing that he would ever get up to that team. They signed Enzo Fittipaldi. They got other guys in their development program. So there's probably people in play for that seat at AlphaTauri. I don't think they're going to get rid of Nyck de Vries. After 1 year, I kind of figure for them to go through all that they went through, that they would probably keep him around and would see him as somebody with the potential to move forward. So for Yuki Tsunoda, they hung him out to dry. I mean, yes, he's had his moments where he's hung them out to dry, but this was pretty bad management on their part, and to not have him unlap himself and then basically not only give up spots to Williams one time, he gave up spots to Williams twice. Will be an interesting one to hear if they send out notices about what happened with that, but pretty poor on their part. It's not like they had a lot of pace, though. They were getting blown past on the front straightaway with relative ease by virtually everybody.
Yeah, it's a big season for Tsunoda next year. They've obviously brought in De Vries as a replacement for Gasly, given that they are, you know, similar age and similar experience. It's just Nyck de Vries' experiences have come from outside of Formula One. So, yeah, if Nyck de Vries is faster than Yuki Tsunoda, I think that will be the final nail in the coffin for him. But it seems odd talking about this man so far down the order, Lando Norris, Owain. He caused that final safety car of his car failure, a 5-second penalty for spilling Leclerc into the barriers, and a bad race all round for him and McLaren as a whole.
I can't remember what position he was in before his car went bang. But yeah, no, obviously the...
I think he was 10th from memory.
That's not too bad, actually. Yeah, no, so assuming he's 10th, and obviously he's, you know, served the penalty, I believe, by that point. Obviously not great to spin Leclerc off. But yeah, no, I must say, it is a little bit... I know it's obviously not easy at Interlagos. It's not exactly... It's not like one of these brand new facilities that has a nice escape road running both sides of the track. Obviously it is, and it is obviously defined by the fact that half of it's on a big hill. But I think, you know, it was a little bit poor from him, unfortunately, to park it on the right-hand side. But I'm really nitpicking. And to be honest, he did suffer a Mercedes failure, one of the first we've seen for a long, long while. You know, just at a really opportune part of the track. So, you know, that's the only thing I can level against him, but that's not that much in comparison. Yeah, it's not an amazing weekend, really, for him. But I guess it doesn't matter because he's coming back next year anyway. You know, it's one of those things. I think he did quite well out at the start, but yeah, it's just that incident with Leclerc that sort of precipitated him going backwards, and then obviously, you know, the failure really was what took him out. It would have been nice to see what he could have done without having that failure.
Yeah, some minor steering damage hampered some of his pace, which is why he was dropping back. But I don't think he would have, before his failure, I don't think he would have been much higher than that anyway. But move on to his teammate, Tom, and I'll come to you for this, because I understand you've got some news on Daniel Ricciardo that's breaking. So I'll let you reveal it.
Yeah. So in a shock to absolutely nobody on planet Earth, he has been deemed at fault for the collision with Kevin Magnussen on lap one. That gives Daniel Ricciardo a three-place grid drop ahead of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, and also more points on his license. He has up to 8 penalty points on his license. With regards to the actual incident, I think it's a slam dunk, isn't it? You know, he tried to make a move on Magnussen. He got it wrong. He hit Magnussen once, Magnussen corrected, kept on the line, and then they collided again. And the catalyst for all of this was Daniel Ricciardo. So, you know, that's it. That's why you got the penalty. You know, both out lap one. Not a good day for McLaren at all. Just, I mean, oh God, just what happened to him? He's just been completely outdone by Lando for two seasons in that McLaren, and it's just a bit embarrassing for him now, isn't it? So he is on 8. Yeah, he received 2 penalty points. Didn't take them long to find him at fault, as he was reviewed all the video evidence, and they also had GPS and telemetry data from McLaren and from Haas. I mean, that's going to tell you everything you need to know anyway. The stewards did acknowledge that the incident was not reckless. They also said, this is interesting, the stewards also determined the incident between the two cars was not influenced by multiple other cars, and it's therefore not a, quote, first lap incident. So from that, That to me sounds like they consider a first lap incident to be when you have like a gaggle of cars going into, say, turn one, two complex at Interlagos, and you know, if you then have someone who got squeezed, you know, like 3 into 1 doesn't go kind of thing. That's why they consider a first lap incident to be. Looking at the document here on the screen, it said the stewards determined that Ricciardo was wholly to blame for the incident and issued a drop of 3 quick places for the next event. It also says the stewards determined that Magnussen drove in a normal manner for that corner and that he did not make any erratic moves, which I think is pretty accurate, because you know, he was just keeping his nose clean from the cars ahead of him. And Danny Rick, you know, bit of an opportunist move. I mean, he's a racer, he's always gonna sort of have a look. Any racing driver would. Unfortunately, got it wrong and caused a double DNF. It's quite a heavy shunt and quite a heavy bounce as well, because when he saw the car sort of bounce across the road to come to the resting place in the wall, that it to be sort of like bouncing around quite a bit. But that could also be because that's how sort of firmly sprung these new regulation cars are. So yeah, Danny Rick bowing out in style by getting himself a grid drop, which will probably mean he'll qualify P16 and start P19, because let's be fair, he's unlikely to get out of Q1. It's a far cry from Monza last year when he said, "I never left." I mean, you can't leave if you don't turn up. That's what I have to say on him.
Nice. Well, the only driver who finished behind him was about 3 yards further behind him. Started the race started the weekend with a bang, Phil, and certainly ended it with one as well, and reversing right into the side of Daniel Ricciardo as he span out of the Grand Prix. 1 point for the team, though, scored this weekend in just the sprint. So a successful weekend for Kevin, despite his early exit today.
Yeah, unfortunate for him getting that huge pole position in the mixed qualifying on Friday, being able to lead a few laps again. I mean, yeah, he did lead last year when he was at IMSA, running for Ganassi in the Cadillac program, but leading again in Formula One and having the great weekend, Gene Haas's 70th birthday this weekend. Getting the 1 point gives him a 2 point gap going into Abu Dhabi, but the damage they had hopefully wasn't anything gearbox related or power unit related, so that they would have to take a grid drop as well. But I mean, the unfortunate end. I think points were on offer for him today. The way all the strategy was going and the way that their car seemed to be working today, I think there was a chance for Kevin Magnussen to get points. Instead, he never really had a chance. But getting that 1 point might be the difference at the end of the day, this time next week, when we're discussing the race in Abu Dhabi and where they finish in constructors. And to be fair, considering where they were this time a year ago with Egghead and all that, to be qualifying on pole and having a car that was leading a race and Kevin Magnussen and the energy, the positive energy he's brought to this team in his second stint, there seems to be hope. Whether that hope goes somewhere, whether it's Nico Hülkenberg or Mick Schumacher or whatever, and now they have a new sponsor, we will see. But a net, I think, even with the first lap DNF, it was a net positive weekend for Haas F1, one of the best moments in their existence. So they can leave this season at least having that piece out there. Kevin Magnussen gets to go out, of the season knowing that he was able to accomplish that too, living up to some of the potential that many people thought he had years ago when he got hired by McLaren.
Certainly made himself a very popular figure in the paddock when people were a bit ambivalent to him in the past, especially Nico Hülkenberg as well. But we'll leave the sucking implements to one side for a moment, because that story is well and truly in the past, I think, with those two. But we'll move on to what you guys think of the driver of the day then. So, Owain, who are you going to go for driver of the day?
I mean, I kind of don't want to because of who he is, but I got to go Fernando Alonso. I mean, anyone that can start 17th and end up fifth, I mean, it's just I got to go with him for it. That's an astounding achievement, even in a race, that's a bit topsy turvy.
Cool, Tom, your choice.
I'm going to say Carlos Sainz, but I think you do have to give special mention to Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton for their drives today. But Sainz, given, like I said earlier, like he was, he started with that grid penalty, completely outclassed his teammate. Ferrari did their best to mess up his strategy, but he still worked his backside off for a podium, and he got it on merit, unlike his teammate who was saying, teach me a podium. So, yeah, that's my impression of Leclerc, which is what he sounded like. He sounded like Max, to be honest. So, yeah, it was, for me, Carlos Sainz.
Okay, and Phil?
Yeah, I concur on Carlos Sainz. I mean, I was surprised when the vote came through, at least for F1. I think there was obvious, you know, where it is and who their favorite driver is. And yes, he may be my favorite driver, but Carlos had the best performance. I would give a honorable mention to the guy who did have the best weekend of his Formula One career, to go and win the sprint after a mistake in qualifying, albeit it helped him stay in third, and then go out there, win the sprint, beat the world champion, and then go out there, hold off another world champion to win your first Grand Prix. While some in our group may or not be a fan of the guy, George Russell did go out there and did the job and got fastest lap, led the most laps, and also won a race and was able to hold off his teammate. And then has been the better driver in the team this year. So Lewis will be beaten by a teammate for only the second time legitimately in his career. So that's something to be said about him too, for people who want to talk about George Russell. Only Jenson Button can really say that. So that's something for George Russell. But Carlos, the smooth operator, was on it today.
Yeah, so it's now 15 points of this between Lewis Hamilton and George Russell now. So, 25.
I've 25. Misread that.
So, yeah, let's see. Yes, 25. So, Hamilton needs a win. Needs a win and a fastest lap. So, yeah, you're right. George Russell is going to finish ahead of Lewis Hamilton for this this season, almost certainly. So, congratulations to him and a great race. And if you want to hear my drive of the day, you can listen to the Monkey Seat podcast recording tomorrow evening. And that's my plug for that. We'll be live, I think, roughly the same time that we'll be doing our Abu Dhabi preview for Grid Talk as well. So, come and listen to Grid Talk first and then listen to the audio version of Monkey Seat podcast straight afterwards. Owain, where can people go to see and hear more from you?
It won't be Twitter. I think I've started a protest of Twitter just because of Elon Musk being in a hell of his own making.
I'll lend you the £8. I don't mind.
No, I don't want the £8. It's too funny. It's too funny watching Elon Musk being an advertiser hell. But you know, you made your bet on that one, mate. So sit in it. If you want to look at my old tweets, they're available on at Owain Medford, I think. I'm not verified, but that's okay, how you know that I'm actually verified.
Oh, okay. Okay, Tom, where can people hear from you?
You can't really. I don't.
I'm going to keep asking you until you get something.
Get Mastodon.
Who?
I don't know.
That's a band. Sorry, it's Sonosphere 10 years ago, actually. But no, I've got my own Instagram, which is cool, which you're not going to know about. I don't have Twitter or any of that nonsense because I'm far too old. And I'm not paying £8 for a blue tick. There's a bloody credit crunch going on. Come on. As a Grid Talk, Tom, I'll give you the spiel about that in a minute. That's where you can find most of my wafflings.
And I'll keep your OnlyFans page for my personal use.
Well, yeah, that's private. Or you can hit me up on LinkedIn of all places. But it's not my work phone, so I won't respond during the weekends.
Okay, Phil, tell us about the Grip Strip Pod.
Yeah, after I almost threw up on myself, that's a great segue. Grip Strip Podcast, we do it every week. We talk about all things motorsports. Whether it's in North America or the world, we'll go over the Sao Paulo Grand Prix tomorrow. Myself and my co-host Josh Fine. You can find me on Twitter at Philip G Matthew. You can find us at Gripstrip Pod there, and Josh at JP Huffine. Our show is basically anywhere you can find podcasts. We're also at philipgmatthew.com, and we'll be on tomorrow for episode 144 to go over all those things, and World Superbikes, World Rally Championship, WEC, etc., etc. We go over all things motorsports. So talk about that. Get a little bit of NFL action in there as well, and thanks to you, Tom, even with the technical difficulties, you're able to fight through there. And great to be on, as always, on the Grid Talk with you guys, Tom D and Owain and everyone. We have fun here, pick at each other, but we have a good time. So it's always great to be here amongst a great group here.
Thanks a lot, Phil. Yeah, it's always great fun when you're on as well. We can always guarantee some hot takes. So thanks for your contributions as always. And if you want to hear more from Grid Talk, hopefully with a visible host, I'm going to get onto BT as soon as I finish this. Well, not actually, not sorry. Tomorrow morning, get straight onto BT to get this sorted. But if you want to hear more from the Grid Talk, we do have a huge back catalogue of shows you can go back and listen to. All of our race shows, most of them anyway, go out live on YouTube straight after the event, and our audio version is up slightly later, which is available on Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Omni Studio, and Pocket Casts. We also run a Patreon. If you want to help us continue what we're doing, then please consider donating to us, as everything does go back into the show so we can improve your experience. We will be back tomorrow for the preview of the final race of the season, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. So we look forward to seeing and hearing you then. Goodbye.